Everyone, please take their seats. I'd like to bring the meeting to order.
Are you assuming I'm going to lose all those?
Later, that happens. Okay. I'll start the meeting. Is the microphone on back there?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll start the meeting with a roll call. Rob Miller. John Brady. John Fouché.
Here.
Bob Simonson.
Here.
Russell Westman.
Here.
Dave Dubink. I knew he wasn't going to make it. Dan Berman said he couldn't make it. Maria Kelly.
Here.
Marshall Ohilski.
Present.
James Furman.
Present.
Rob Scheip.
Here.
Karen Vendetti.
Here.
Lee Ferraro.
Here.
Okay, we have a quorum. Welcome to the June 30 meeting of the Wastewater Technical Advisory Committee. This will be the last TAC meeting scheduled to discuss technical memorandums produced by the county project team in response to the questions from the independent EIR team. The two technical memorandums that we are discussing this evening are Project Alternative of the Wastewater Project. Environmental impacts and carbon footprint are two of those core values, and their importance, not only to the TAC, but also to the community, has been reiterated many times over in comments we have received from the public. This evening's discussion of the technical memorandum on greenhouse gases speaks to both of those issues, and thus is highly pertinent to the selection of a project. Our task on the TAC is to review, question, comment, and receive public input on the contents of these technical memos, especially as it pertains to the effects we believe it may have on Los Osos community. Those of you who might wish to comment during public comment period should restrict your comments to the contents of each technical memo. If you believe there is an alternative solution to the topic under discussion, you should submit that information directly to the project team at lowwp@co.slo.ca.us. In order for us to get through our agenda and adjourn by 9:30, I ask you to stay on topic. The next meeting of the TAC will be scheduled for some time after the draft EIR is published. Before we start our agenda tonight, I would like to ask John Waddell of the county project team to make a few comments on the status of the project. John?
Thank you, Chairman Garfinkel. I'm John Waddell, County Public Works Department. As you said, this is the last scheduled TAC meeting for reviewing the project tech memos. Anticipate potentially scheduling more TAC meetings this fall around the release of the draft EIR. But on the technical memos, these are the last two of the scheduled list of technical memos. We will be wrapping up our responses to public comment and also TAC comments and questions, and doing final edits on the previously released draft technical memos, and hope to have most of those out by the end of July. There are a couple tech memos, most likely flow and loads, and then also the greenhouse gas that we'll be discussing today, that we will likely wait to final until after the peer review, just because of the kind of the controversial nature of those, and allow the peer review on the location of potential step tank if a step collection system alternative is implemented. And it's an important step for preliminary design. I had brought a sample to put on the document camera, but fortunately it's not working correctly. Essentially, it's one side is there's an aerial photo of the property and a sticker that's to scale of a approximate scale of a septic tank and the excavation, asking property owners to use that sticker to indicate where they would prefer their septic tank on their property. On the back side, kind of has some information on what this is about, and then a question of general filling towards collection system alternatives of a, you know, the step collection system alternative. And then there's also a cover letter that's much more in depth. It's a two-page letter kind of explaining collection systems, step systems, and why we're doing the survey. And as I said, that should be in the mail by next week, so property owners should be keeping an eye out for that. Also included is a self-addressed stamped envelope for returning the aerial photo survey form. On the subject of the peer review, which I mentioned earlier, they will be reviewing, basically it's the National Water Research Institute peer review team. It's going to be chaired by Dr. George Chabaniglis. It's essentially the same team that reviewed the Ripley report, which was commissioned by the Los Osos Community Services District. They have the documents and have begun reviewing them. We expect the panel to do their deliberations and produce a report by the end of the summer. Also this summer, I know the TAC is going to be on somewhat of a break, but we, as county staff, we've been looking at scheduling some field trips to wastewater project-related installations around the state, mostly in Northern California. And just want to invite both TAC members and members of the public who are interested. As we get these scheduled, we'll get the word out of when we're going, and hopefully we can get some interested people to come along with us. We can all caravan or carpool. Some of the sites we're looking at are the greenhouses for solar drying of sludge, a plant near Stockton. Petaluma Wastewater Treatment Plant, which uses wetlands for final polishing. Also, Scotts Valley Water Reclamation Facility, and potentially some agricultural. I would expect it would be the project team, and as far as what members of consultants, certainly county staff, I'm not sure what members of our consultants, both engineering or EIR, that would be going along. But then, of course, we'll get the word out, and the TAC and the public. Okay. Will also be invited.
Thank you.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, members of your committee, Mark Hutchinson, Department of Public Works. I did want to update you a little bit on the EIR activities. As you'll recall, in December of 2007, we prepared and distributed a notice of preparation to agencies and also posted on our website, letting them know that we were preparing an EIR and describing the scope of that document. You may recall that EIR identifies a wide range of potential alternatives. Talks about everything from decentralized treatment to regional treatment. It also mentioned the potential for treatment facilities and disposal sites east of town. But at that point in time, because we hadn't initiated the analysis, we didn't identify any potential sites. In response to that, we received what I would consider a light agency response. So we're following up with a supplement to the notice of preparation and identifying some of the sites east of town that your TAC has been talking about, the Giacomazzi and Tanini sites, Turi, Andre Robbins, and others, putting those on a map, sending that out to agencies in an attempt to elicit more comments from them on their feelings about what kind of environmental effects they would expect to see analyzed, not only from utilizing those sites, but also transporting wastewater and effluent there. That document should be out to agencies sometime this week and posted on our website before the end of the week so the folks can see what's there. It's quite a bit smaller than the first 34-page document and simply is there to transmit a map of potential sites and see if we can't get a little more agency participation in writing as far as the analysis of those goes.
Thank you. Bob.
I'd like to suggest that the county add the injection wells in Orange County to their field trip list.
Thank you. Okay, that's the. Thank you for the update. We'll now go to.
I can second.
And second it. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? And two abstentions. Okay. Three abstentions. Minutes are accepted. And we'll move on briskly. Our first technical memorandum tonight is the memorandum titled Project Alternatives, Greenhouse Gas Emissions. I'd like to start our discussion on that with an introduction on the technical memo from staff, and I think Mark Hutchinson is going to make that introduction. Mark?
Thanks, Bill. Mark Hutchinson again, for the record. I just have a little bit of background on greenhouse gas emissions in general, a little bit about the state laws, a brief discussion of the approach that this technical memorandum took, and then I have some interesting background numbers that you might find helpful in your discussion. As a result of general scientific consensus and increased public awareness regarding global warming and climate change, there's been new focus placed on the California Environmental Quality Act, CEQA, especially that review process that we go through as to whether or not we can use CEQA as a means to address the effects of greenhouse gas emissions from projects proposed in California. State law defines greenhouse gas to include the following elements: carbon dioxide, methane, nitrous oxide, hydrofluorocarbons, perfluorocarbons, and sulfur hexafluoride. The most common greenhouse gas that results from human activity is carbon dioxide, which is which the effect of greenhouse gas emissions is measured in, followed by methane and nitrous oxide. The greenhouse gas technical memo focuses only on carbon dioxide, methane, and nitrous oxide, as these comprise the majority of the greenhouse gas emissions generated from the conveyance and treatment of wastewater. The other three chemicals are primarily used in the refrigeration industry. There are two relatively new state laws that are relevant to your discussion. The first is AB 32, adopted in 2006, which establishes a statewide goal of reducing greenhouse gas emissions to 1990 levels by the year 2020, and also, not commonly quoted, to 80% below 1990 levels by the year 2050. The law requires the California Air Resources Board Air Resources Inventory, along with requirements to measure, track, and report greenhouse gas emissions by the industries that it determined to be significant sources of emissions. The other law is Senate Bill 97, adopted in 2007. That requires the Governor's Office of Planning and Research to develop guidelines for the mitigation of greenhouse gas emissions for use in our CEQA documents, with a focus on transportation and energy consumption. Those guidelines are due by January 1, 2009, and the state is required to adopt some form of those by January 1, 2010. In your technical memorandum, we estimated the annual greenhouse gas emissions of two collection system alternatives, gravity and step, and three treatment alternatives, ox ditch, BioLac, and air diffusion pond treatment. We prepared a comprehensive greenhouse gas inventory, including both annual operations and maintenance and construction emissions, to aid you in comparing those alternatives. For the inventory, the construction and operations phases of the collection system and treatment facilities included the collection or construction of the system, and we annualized those impacts over 30 years. So you see one table that identifies the construction emissions, but in the totals, those are spread out over a 30-year lifetime. Operation of the system and its treatment facilities, details such as production and hauling of materials consumed and excavated for the construction, production and hauling of chemicals that are used for treatment of wastewater, hauling of septage from step tanks, release of methane from collection systems and treatment facilities, and hauling of biosolids to the final disposal site. You have summary sheets that were created as a result of the inputs and the calculations performed in the spreadsheets that support the inventory, and the summary sheet is included in appendix, the last appendices of the TM, in addition to a very extensive listing of all of the technical information and details applied to complete the analysis. Now for some general background numbers. United States is the largest greenhouse gas emitter in the world at an average of 19 tons per capita per year. The largest emitter state is Texas. California is the second largest. Depending on who you ask, California is the 9th to 16th largest emitter in the world, because we have the fifth largest economy in the world. But California's per capita number is only 12 tons per year. So among states, California shares that 12 tons per capita with three other states, and I found that reference in nine places, and they don't list the other three states. But to give you a, which are primarily carbon dioxide, transportation is number one at 41%, electric power 22%, including out-of-state generation, industrial 21%, agriculture and forestry 8%, a general category of others at 7%, and domestic wastewater treatment at 1%. So statewide in 1990, we generated 2.8 million metric tons treating wastewater in the state of California. Compare that to the TM before you, where the current greenhouse gas generation from wastewater treatment, which is sludge hauling and methane from septic tanks primarily, is 856 metric tons per year. Remember, that's not million metric tons. That's 856, where the state's at 497 million. The range of the alternatives is 947 to 1,742 tons per year. So you have a difference of somewhere between 91 tons per year increase and 886 tons per year increase. Put that in context, at 12 tons per year per capita, that's the equivalent of somewhere between 8 and 74 residents. Not huge numbers at that point. However, because of the mandates in Assembly Bill 32, and especially looking out at the year 2050, where we need to be 80% below the 1990 generation amount on a statewide basis, producing a project that allows for maximum mitigation of greenhouse gas emissions is important. So I remind you that in CEQA, we typically follow set criteria for developing mitigation measures. The first, of course, is to avoid the impact altogether. The next would be to reduce the impact as much as possible with the project. Third is mitigate on-site, and in this context, that would be mitigation measures that the project and or community has full control over. And the fourth level is to mitigate off-site. Primarily, in this case, that means greenhouse gas credits from a cap-and-trade program. In evaluating greenhouse gas emissions once a project alternative has been selected, and again, considering the full range of environmental impacts, it will be important to select mitigation measures that are proven effective, sustainable, and in this case, that would mean low secondary impacts, and also cost-efficient. I have two sources of information for your committee if you want to look into this further in the audience listening. I don't have the websites, but in California today, the best two places to look are on the website.
The second one was sustainable, and the third one I believe is low impact, and I totally didn't catch the first one.
The three bullets are proven effective, sustainable, and cost effective.
Are there any other questions of attack to the staff on their presentation? If not, I think...
Yes, I had one.
Russell?
Mark, I'm going to tell you how glad I am you did this, because I did the same thing. I came up with 13 instead of 12 and came up with a number that the swing here is something less than 0.5% of what our per capita is. But the question I had for you is, is this going to be part now of the comments you made? Is this going to be part of the technical memorandum?
I don't know that we'll make it formally in the technical memorandum, but I should let you know that the idea behind this TM is it forms the core of what you'll see in the environmental impact report. The EIR has to then expand upon this in the context of the global warming discussion in general. So
well,
a little more to that than greenhouse gas.
The point I wanted to make is looking at the various figures, like figure two, for example, that should also be in the context of what the total, the estimates are for our total greenhouse gas emissions are for the area of Los Osos.
That's important. I don't know if the point came across. We look at those numbers, and, you know, you see things like, 900 tons per year increase. Sounds like a tremendous amount. But in context, maybe not so tremendous. Mm-hmm. But then when you go back and look at the AB 32 mandates and what we're trying to do on a statewide level, it seems that small amounts could have more significance than we might otherwise initially grasp.
Well, that part I also picked up on, but I still think it's important that the bigger picture also be part of the written documentation.
Certainly.
John.
Mark, a question for you. I'm not an environmental expert, but it seems to me like I've read where there's certain weighted significance for environmental impacts depending on what the environmental impact may be. If it's towards agriculture, if it's towards the air, if it's towards water quality, and those kind of things. I believe there's a ranking system for that for CEQA. Am I correct in that? And if so, if I am correct, where would this rank in the weighing of the significance or importance?
Actually, there is no sort of outweigh one impact with the other necessarily. So really, it's a lead agency decision on how much weight you should put on one kind of impact versus another. And, you know, you may have contradictions, especially when we have mandates coming down from the state level that give us guidance on, say, not necessarily how to assess an agricultural impact, but how it should be mitigated. And then on the other hand, you have another state agency suggesting or directing how you should impact air quality kinds of things. So the task of the EIR is to identify all of those and put the information out there so that the public and decision makers can essentially come to their own conclusions.
Rob?
Yeah, just a brief question, Mark. Putting this in the larger context of a project selection process, sort of piggybacking on John's comment, a lead agency, they see a range of projects and a range of impacts through the appropriate findings, if they're balanced against other factors such as cost. Does this memo make anything difficult to reach from a project option standpoint for a lead agency who's motivated by a community survey or other factors to select a certain project?
Well, what's interesting about the greenhouse gas, and what I think where you're going is, you know, could we select a project with a larger greenhouse gas footprint in order to reduce an impact in another area or create more options? You know, we're in the wastewater, water supply, biology, all of those are relevant. It's an interesting situation because with the cap and trade program developed by the state potentially out there, one approach to greenhouse gas emissions is to convert it to dollars. I mean, if the option of mitigating your impact by buying credits is always, you know, on the table as a last resort, that gives you a method to go back and compare the cost of that to, say, the cost of an alternative that has, you know, reduction in cost for water supply or something. So we might be able to get to some sort of comparison by bottom lining these things out to the money situation. On the other hand, a lot of that's dependent on how the state views it. We don't have a free hand in CEQA, and we do have an attorney general in Sacramento who has his own ideas about what EIR should say, big and small, about greenhouse gas. So it would be important to follow the state's lead in selecting alternatives.
Week, and I think we had a very, very productive two-hour meeting with him to discuss our questions and concerns over the memo. I think specifically we didn't really have a lot of concerns that weren't addressed. At the beginning, when we first started talking about technical memo and the greenhouse gas memo, there were some questions of what would be included and how it would be analyzed and how it would be looked at. And I think, as Mark explained to us, through the refinement process of developing the technical memo, we think that basically all of the questions that we had were addressed. I think the only outstanding issue that we felt wasn't included in the technical memo was the issue of the old project at the Midtown site with the MBR as forming a basis of comparison for what you did actually analyze in the technical memo. So I think that was the one issue that we felt should be included, is the project that was previously under construction.
One of the reasons why we brought that up is that all the other memos have identified and gone over the, you know, broken the projects down, and this was really the first memo. We haven't heard of the Midtown project, we discussed this with Mark. We hadn't heard of the Midtown project or that technology for treatment since the fine screening, so we just thought that for the purposes of keeping everything moving forward. And Mark did say that it would be, you know, further analyzed in the EIR, and you know, however that gets addressed. One of the things that I think came out of our conversation, which is the recognition, is that there's going to be impacts, and all impacts have mitigation. And like Mark said, you have the options of how those mitigations happen. And again, that will be addressed in the EIR, whether it's a dollar amount or, you know, a biological. And so we felt pretty comfortable. The other thing that came up was addressing the flexibility to address future, current and future, you know, more assembly bills or more, you know, environmental issues, changes that may need to happen to our technologies over the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years, and kind of discuss what type of treatment might, what system would have the most flexibility to address those concerns. And I think that, and the other thing was, we did discuss the bar graph because it looks somewhat drastic, but when we really discussed it, it's not that.
Maria jogged my mind over. One of the things that we felt was important is when we got to mitigation of greenhouse gases, and Mark listed out the concerns or considerations in that, but we wanted to make sure that the mitigation measures remained under self-control as much as possible, which Mark talked about being able to mitigate on-site rather than having to go to cap and trade or other issues. And we felt from the tax core values that having self-control and ability to self-mitigate these issues was a critical factor for us.
And some of the discussions that came up around that was where could there possibly be changes in energy develop, like would it be through solar, wind, whatever, as the future technologies evolve, where could we plug in these issues to even reduce that? Right, Marshall, we talked about that? So that was kind of one of the things we did discuss extensively was flexibility and what will we have the most control over to adjust over time.
Is that it on comments and from the environmental? Okay, for now. Okay, that's all right. We can come back. Why don't we move over to the Financial Committee then and get what inputs they might have? Karen, you just lead it off? Okay.
Yes. Hi, glad to be back. The finance group met last week and took a look at things. We did have a few comments and questions that I'll share briefly as it relates to greenhouse gas. First of all, there have been several questions that have come from various sources about the amount of methane to be vented from step tanks. So we didn't know where the source of your information in that technical memorandum was coming from, and if there had been a second opinion from a totally objective outside source. So that was a question. Another question that we had, we liked what we saw, but we felt like it was not complete, to be honest with you. We were hoping that the TM would address some of the other options where the CO2 equivalents could be reduced. And we came up with a few of our thoughts, and it sounds like environmental did as well, in terms of, for instance, solar energy at the plant. Another one would be, are there ways to scrub methane from step vents? From the step vents in particular. Are there such things as aerobic step tanks? Don't know about those things, but would like to see that explored as we consider the two types of collection system popped up. We noticed in Table 3, there's quite a substantial difference in the CO2 equivalents between the existing septic tanks and STEP. 840 for the existing, 624 for STEP. And didn't know why that was, to be honest with you. So just need some clarification on that. And also I might bring to our attention, this is something we did not discuss in our meeting, but it is in a WENT article that is very recent and pertains. The title was Sustainable Solutions. And it talks about the four big goals that we all share, and that is to reduce our energy requirements of the wastewater treatment plant, to become energy self-sufficient, to modify end-of-pipe treatment to produce energy, and finally, to decentralize treatment and collection in order to recover nutrients at the source. Now, one of these seemed to pertain particularly, again, relating to STEP, and that was methane on how we generate power from methane. And I think we heard something about that back in the fine screen. Haven't thought or heard about it much since then, but I think that that also deserves exploring. Did I miss anything else, you guys? Is that it?
Thank you. Does the project team have any answers to some of those questions that were brought up at this point?
Okay, I'll start, and then when I go awry, John will poke me and he'll take over. Let's see, how do they calculate how much methane would be generated from a septic tank? And I was looking for it in the TM, but it's actually a fairly straightforward mathematical calculation having to do with biological oxygen demand. And they can actually calculate what the BOD is in the tank and in the effluent, come up with the difference, and that converts through a mathematical formula into pounds, kilograms of methane. So it's pretty straightforward. Pretty basic math. Actually, I think it's on page 7. BOD concentration is where that comes from. At least that's for the STEP system. And of course, options for reduction of energy, again, or for the greenhouse gas emission. TM didn't go towards mitigation. We didn't touch that one at this point. I think we need a better picture of the whole locations. And they admitted that that was actually a marketing element to their odor scrubbing devices. The scientific community that we spoke with essentially said they did not understand how a carbon filter would be effective in removing methane, and the manufacturers agree, and a couple suggested that they might in the future modify their websites. So there is no effective means to remove methane, at least on a tank-by-tank basis. Although if you look on the web, you'll see a great many products that claim they do that. And we mentioned one in the EIR, or in the tech memo, just because the proprietor was very straightforward and honest about the fact that there had been no testing and was no scientific basis whatsoever for those claims. Aerobic step tanks. There are systems out there that put air into the step tanks. They're actually on-site treatment systems. So if they actually work, they should, in theory, have less methane gas emissions. But then you're getting into the realm where you're talking about essentially a wastewater treatment plant buried in your backyard. So it's a bit more complex when you add the aerobic digestion to it. And the baseline. Remember that the goals in AB 32 are statewide goals. They're not per capita goals. Their total generation goals. It's not clear whether the state is going to make that on a countywide basis, a region-wide, a community, or project-wide basis. On the other hand, Office of Planning and Research, which is more CEQA-based and which is being pushed by the Attorney General's office, appears to be taking an angle that as we do CEQA analysis on projects, we should be applying those target goals on a project-by-project basis. And you can see there's going to be some conflicts in the future as we might have a community that for other reasons is greatly reducing its greenhouse gas footprint and then have a problem in CEQA where a specific project that doesn't meet the goal is assailed somehow as being inadequate. So I think the level of regulation hasn't developed to that point. But for the basic question, if the state said we're going to apply the statewide goal on a community-wide basis, then your population would be initially irrelevant. Then I think I'm going to, the power for methane is one that we looked at. And that really goes to, is it possible if you have dispersed sources to efficiently collect the methane and make efficient use of it? And so far, that investigation has showed that we haven't found anything. Why STEP is less than the existing tanks? I am sure that I knew the answer to that, and hopefully John does, because I don't.
Yes, on that. I think that Mark got all your questions but that one. The existing septic tanks retain all of the BOD, and then it breaks down over time, and so it has a certain amount of methane emissions, whereas with the STEP system, some of the BOD is sent on to the treatment plant, where then it's treated there. And so not all of the BOD breaks down in the septic tank, which is in with a STEP system, which is why then the methane emissions from a step tank or less than with the existing septic tanks.
I believe one of the questions also asked by the Financial Committee that Los Osos is kind of a skeptical community. Have you, on the figures that you came up with for the methane generation from septic tanks, did you have any third party or independent party go over those numbers?
Well, we, you know, our Corolla did the primary analysis, pretty independent engineering company. We also have sent the documents to the local Air Resources Board, and also had the environmental review team, and they have, the MBA actually has an air quality division or unit that is up on greenhouse gas emissions. They also reviewed it. And then just the actual calculations are pretty well laid out in the tech memo, and the reference to some international guidelines that are also followed by the US EPA are essentially what were used to develop that. So it's pretty straightforward. If there are other theories or references, be happy to hear those from the TAC or the public.
Does that address your question, Karen? Okay, thank you. Any other things from the financial? Then with that, we'll move on to the engineering group. Who would like to kick it off for engineering?
I'll make a quick comment. I noticed your reference to the 2050 goals for greenhouse emissions and the reduction. And I think, I think the general idea is very laudable, and the electrical power industry, which first they sold off the power plants to the non-utilities. Then there was immediate speculation, and we saw what happened in the power area. And so they reversed several parts of that act. And so they did not sell off hydro or nuclear, and they made other changes. So that was one effort to regulate through legislation that did not work out as well as you might have hoped. Another one has to do with the law that suggested, it said that by year 2010, I believe it was, that we were going to have sold 200,000 electrical cars in this state. It turns out that by 2008, we'd actually sold 20,000, and they had to back off of that legislation. We're talking about electrical cars, they're pure electrical cars now. So it's very difficult to legislate certain types of response of the public, especially if it is in the face of tough laws of economics and people's choices, and they're not always successful. So I think the way to approach the goals we have here is to respect them as best we can, but not do it through initial investments of money. Let's wait and see how this plays out over the next, in this case, 40 years. Yeah.
Thank you. Bob, John, any comments?
I just have a couple comments. One of my comments was along the lines of the environmental group. I was wondering why the Midtown project hadn't been included in this analysis. The methane numbers, I did my senior project on the septic tanks in Los Osos in 1975, and my advisor, Dr. Winneberger, he was at Berkeley at the time, but he was doing research down here, and at that time he was supposedly the leading expert in the country on septic tanks. And if you read some of Dr. Chabonikas's textbooks dealing with septic systems, he has many references to Dr. Winneberger. So anyway, I went back and was looking at some of the figures, because one of the things he was very interested in was methane generation in septic tanks. And even if it reduced the methane, you still would have all the problems that are associated with just having a treatment plant on site to begin with, and I don't think those will outweigh the gain you would have in the saving of methane generation.
John, go ahead, John Fouché.
Yeah. I'll just add one other item to what's already been discussed, so I won't repeat everything else, but I was hoping for some discussion also after reading this about ag exchange and the fact that doing ag exchange doesn't require denitrification and nitrification, which would be some credits there for that. Also, there would be credits for the fertilizer that the farmers wouldn't have to buy, and I would think that discussion would be part of this document also.
Thank you. Rob?
John stole some of my thunder there. Thanks, John. Just a couple of quick comments. One is, one of the issues that the TAC had struggled with 6 months ago in looking at the different treatment options is whether a pond option would generate methane emissions that were significant. And we left that purposefully vague in our write-up, if you remember that from our deliberations. And pleased to say that it's been addressed in this TEC memo on page 6, where they concluded that there were not going to be significant methane emissions from the pond treatment process. That's a footnote on table 2 of page 6. So noted that was addressed. A couple of other comments, a couple of things that the EIR team might look at, and along the lines of what John was saying, is things like how much carbon equivalent does it take to make a pound of nitrogen if you're looking at ag exchange. Water conservation, we spend an awful lot of electrical power just pumping our water out of the ground, conveying it and pressurizing it, and to the extent that we have a water conservation program that goes along with the project, look at the credits associated with that program and the energy savings from that. I know that that's a common thing to look at. I think those would be good mitigations to consider. And I think that was it.
Do you have a response on that, John?
Yes, I just do have a quick response, kind of what John Fouché was saying. And like Mark Hutchinson said earlier, that you know, the mitigations are planned to be addressed in the environmental impact report. But also, you may notice in this TEC memo that this greenhouse gas inventory is not complete, in that none of the effluent reuse and disposal alternatives were, their emissions were calculated, or anything related with seawater intrusion mitigation. A couple reasons there. One is that, you know, those options for that, you know, reuse and disposal of the effluent would be the same regardless of the collection and treatment. I mean, whatever collection and treatment option is selected, you know, the reuse and disposal options that are available can apply to any of these six alternatives, so that there's no difference between the alternatives. And then another is that there is such a broad range of alternatives that are put forward in the fine screening report that to really get into that detail right now is something that probably would be better for the environmental impact report, as they can look at greenhouse gas emissions as part of their other analysis and potentially kind of narrow their focus, I think. And I hope I'm not stepping on Mark's toes with that one, but
thank you.
Can I respond to that, Bill?
John.
John, my only response to that would be that under the treatment technologies for tertiary treatment technologies on table 2, we included nitrification, denitrification for all of these alternatives, whereas that may not be necessary if you're using the water for ag exchange, where you don't have to denitrify and you can keep the nitrogen in the water, which is a benefit for the farmers.
Well, yes. And what, you know, the assumption here in looking back at the fine screening report is that your nitrification, denitrification will still be necessary to a certain extent. Ag exchange does not have the capacity for all of the treated effluent. And so I think potentially you could do spray fields in ag exchange and have capacity. But when looking at seawater intrusion mitigation, bringing water back to town in some fashion, whether it's urban reuse or Brodersen, It looks pretty likely, both from a capacity and a seawater intrusion standpoint. So the conservative assumption that was taken in here is that nitrification and denitrification would be necessary to a certain extent.
I guess another response to that would be possibly, would not the farmers be able to take all of the water that we produce, and therefore Burtison would possibly be unnecessary, and then the denitrification would not be necessary.
Rob?
John, I know you're looking through your notes here, but just to jump in real quick, one of the things that the last peer review team looked at relative to the Ripley report is that looking at the crop patterns out there and the amount of pounds of nitrogen that that were necessary, that there would be some nominal removal of nitrogen required to meet agronomic rates for application, that if it went just through and was at 40, that might be too much. It needed to be, like the analysis here at Sea Pines, I think, came out to 22, which is what they have to hit. So there would be some nominal reduction required. That's what the last peer review team came up with, but nowhere near 7 for ag exchange. And it'd be great if they could use all the water. I mean, I think that would be such a bonus to the community to be able to do that. Over time, I think it's good to use some conservative assumptions that we might have to use incentives, we might have to use lease methods, but I'm getting off topic here, sir.
That's fine. Marshall.
I'd just like to address the ag exchange issue, too. We've discussed that in a number of different contexts. And I think it's an excellent idea. There are certainly constraints on it. But I think the thing that needs to be acknowledged is that ag exchange is down the road. It's not an option available today or when the plant comes online because of legal issues involved with groundwater adjudication, et cetera, above and beyond agreements with the agricultural users. So I think that's one issue that needs to just be laid out there. There are legal impediments to doing that will have to be addressed. How significant they are is something that would be found out down the road, but there are impediments. Secondly, I think the other issue that we've found problematic with ag exchange is the year-round aspect of it, because with the ag exchange program, you don't have the ability to do year-round ag exchange. At least that's what we understand. So there would have to be some holding mechanism, for lack of a better term, during the winter months. So those two issues I don't want to raise as major roadblocks, but just as concerns that need to be addressed in the ag exchange picture.
I think those are good points.
Yes.
Chair, I'll just be brief.
Okay, that's all right.
I think at a recent CSD meeting, it was announced that the purveyors had come together and have a work program to look at more carefully those obstacles and really flesh out from a purveyor standpoint what that means. And so we're proceeding on that program.
Thank you. Karen?
Just two comments. First of all, I understand completely what you're saying, Marshall, but I do remember conversations or a TM or something about the possibility of purchasing ag land, which might be cheaper than purchasing other things, including Sprayfield or Broderson or whatever. So that would allow us to do something more immediately. Second of all, I had a question. Rob, maybe you can help me with this. In what John was saying, this discussion about ag exchange and the ag need for nitrogen and fertilizer, one of the things that I've heard and read about a little bit, just a little bit, is special toilets where there's urine separation and they recover nitrogen and phosphorus and then convert that to fertilizer. Are you familiar with this?
Got it. The sequestering toilet idea has been in the community. The regional board's seen that and I think approved it as an interim option for at least one resident that I know of. He would know a lot more than I do, but there's been some discussion of that. As far as the conversion to fertilizer, I haven't had a chance to look into that, but interesting.
Thank you. Any other comments, questions from the TAC? I just have one comment or want to just clarify that in the septage receiving station TM, we kind of came to the TM came to the conclusion that a septage receiving station was economically not a very good idea, even for just the community, or at least was it costly, let's put it that way. However, this technical memo here makes the assumption that you do have a septic receiving station in the plant. I think that needs to be clarified, that if it's going to be STEP, that it also has a septic receiving station as part of the project. And unless you change your things and have the trucks go to Santa Maria, which would, of course, change your calculations immensely, I imagine. Yeah.
So I just want to understand your point that, right, the septic receiving tech memo established that the regional septage does not look economically feasible. On septage receiving for within the community, there certainly is a cost there. I'm not sure, you know, I don't think the conclusion was reached that it's not feasible. And I think the previous Midtown project accepted septage from the surrounding areas, if I have that correct. And so whether it's, you know, STEP or gravity, you know, the assumption that it would at least accept septage from within the community of Los Osos is, that is what's assumed. But of course, that, you know, final decision on that has not been made.
Thank you.
May I?
Yes, Russell.
I want to point out, and I think this came from the audience, which I really enjoyed, was why do you feel we must have septic receiving as opposed to hauling it out like we do now if it's not cost effective?
Well, and like I said, the decision hasn't been made. The tech memo was to, and for the purpose of determining kind of the cost effectiveness, and, you know, the assumption that was for this tech memo is that it would stay within the community, and you know, that was what was permitted last time, and I think there's more work to be done on that.
Thank you. Okay, I think with that we'll open this up to our audience for public comment. Can I get the public comment slips? We're going to start off with Don Bearden, followed by Gail McPherson.
Don Bearden, Los Osos Prohibition Zone. On page one, you only have two collection systems being analyzed, a gravity and a step. There was a whole tech memo devoted to a low-pressure collection system. Why wasn't this system, collection system alternative, analyzed for greenhouse gas emissions, and has a low pressure step system, low pressure collection system been dropped from review? Two, on page APPV1, electricity consumption for operations. How far out of town does a treatment system have to be before a step collection system needs a booster pump? The new Tonini site is another mile and a half past the cemetery. On-site step pumps don't have an infinite distance that they can pump. Number three, page APP2, five bullets down. Assuming 4 feet of cover over a step tank is a little excessive. The fiberglass tank that I have has a limit of 2.5 feet max cover over the top of the tank. The maximum recommended cover depth of an Orenco tank is 4 feet. So I would change the assumption to 2.5 feet of cover and redo the calculations. Number four, page APP2, second bullet from the bottom. The step collection system options will be installed using horizontal directional drilling. I believe that specifying horizontal directional drilling will drive up the cost of the system because the contractors don't want to be limited to that. Five, page APP4, second bullet under biosolids and septic handling, says septic is assumed to travel 3 miles one way to the Los Osos wastewater treatment plant. If the Tanini site is selected, then this would be another 1.5 miles for a total of 4.5 miles one way. Number six, table one in the list of stuff. I would add another column called T&D loss and define T&D loss because it's not exactly obvious what T&D loss is. That's the tables in the back. Number seven, I don't see anywhere that the hundreds of vents on a step collection system are accounted for. These vents are in addition to the step tanks themselves. Every time you have a high point in a step collection system, you have to put a vent there to vent the air out or the gases out of the line. And I don't see those even accounted for. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have Gail McPherson, followed by Keith Weimer.
Good evening, and I thank you for this tech memo. I'm sorry to say that I've been away, and getting through this since the 23rd has been a bit difficult. I did do a lot of calculations and recalled that I put together an emissions inventory program through the state air quality in a region that had very stringent standards. And I want to tell you that while you think perhaps that the state is ineffective in this, in the area of water regulations and air quality on wastewater treatment plants, they've been extremely effective. Every stationary motor, pump, internal combustion engine, everything is inventoried already for treatment plants in Riverside. I know that for a fact. Every tank emission that comes off of the open tanks, and that's why they're being covered, is inventoried for odors and for methane and for CO2 and for all of these gases. And I can tell you that you're wrong. This is very effective in this area. It may not be generally true, but it's true there. So please do not underestimate the need to not be flexible. And why did I say that is because flexibility for you guys, if you choose the wrong treatment process and the wrong collection system, flexibility means you're going to buy credits. And you're in a position where you can actually create credits. If you will close the cycle on nitrogen through agricultural exchange or in lieu, leave the water in the ground, forget those energy hogs of injection wells and MBR, and at least put them in a table so we can look at what they are and how outrageously expensive and how much you'll pay for them in credits. You really need to put some things together. I have a lot of other comments. I know I won't have time to get through them. But the most important thing that I saw here was that the whole thing is driven by methanol. Now, you have other things you can add if you want to denitrify than methanol. But methanol has the highest carbon footprint. To me, that's a manipulation, and I'd like to see other carbon sources. Now, you can do some things with carbon sources with other waste in our area, and that would be a revenue source, actually. So there's a lot of really good things that can come of this. I'm going to put my comments again in writing and try to get that to you. Ken Schmidt put together an excellent report, and I'd like you to review that for the in-lieu. Let's see. Oh, AB 885 kicks in, and I want you to. I would hope that you'd correct that 5-year inspection requirement. And if you don't do subsurface disposal at Broderson, AB 885 doesn't kick in at all for this system. So please, I ask that you look at step collection and not tack methanol as the driver, and really look at it because I think they're both equal. What's coming out of your tank? What's coming out of the plant? If you can collect the methane at the step collection tanks. There are systems that do that, and I'm not talking about that with bogus odor control systems. You can collect that like they do at landfills. You can go to a fuel cell, and I also have experience doing that at Riverside. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Yes, Maria.
Just for clarification, I understand where Mrs. McPherson is coming from, but to clarify for the community and the audience, we are not generating these technical memos. We are not choosing how these memos get written or what the engineering is behind them. So I'd like to clarify, we're reviewing these technical memos and that those comments the county team.
That's what they're
intended
for.
Yeah. Thank you.
And we are not choosing any plants either or any designs or anything like that.
That's correct. We have Keith Weimer followed by Lynette Tarnatsky.
Thank you, Keith Weimer. I know you're not choosing options, but please be very interested in how these things get put together and some of the assumptions that are being made. because some of the assumptions, you know, are driving decision-making here. And one of the ones I want to point out is the assumption that that you have to denitrify, first nitrify and then denitrify, you know, all of the step effluent. And that's where the bias is. When John says that, the, you know, that they're basically all the same in what they produce, not the case, because the assumption is that you're going to have to nitrify using methanol, nitrify the step effluent, and there's a big carbon footprint, as Gail said. So you're adding a lot more carbon, you know, emissions on when you start to talk about nitrifying step effluent and then having to denitrify it. And as somebody said, obviously you don't need to do the whole thing. So, Marshall, in this case, you know, you don't need to store the whole thing because it's seasonal. You know, you're gonna have 500 acre feet going into Brodersen, let's say at the max. Now, I have other suggestions, but that means you're going to have at least 700 acre feet of effluent or recycled water left over. That could go to the crops out there, and you could, you know, you could sequester the carbon, you could offset the nitrogen use out there. You know, something that the environmental group should be very interested in is by reducing the amount of nitrogen fertilizers that go in the ground out there, you reduce the amount that washes into the bay. So so that is a bias in the report, the assumption that there's 100% nitrification of step effluent. It's driven by the idea that all of it has to go to Brodersen and all has to be stored. You could use conservation to offset the need for Brodersen. Brodersen is designed to reduce seawater intrusion, and if you had conservation, you could do it at a level that actually obviated, did away with the need for Brodersen. In the meantime, as Gail says, you leave the water in the ground. You know, the carbon footprint is not generated so much by the wastewater treatment as it is by pumping the water around. Pumping the water around is worth a lot more carbon, you know, emissions than the other. So if you leave the water in the ground and use conservation, you're offsetting a lot of this. From a sustainability point of view, wastewater and solids is a material that can be used to offset the footprint. If we don't offset 800 and some tons of carbon or, you know, emissions in this case, we're not doing our jobs here because there's plenty of material to accomplish that with. Let's see. One of the biases I've seen is that there's no consideration of a decentralized step option or cluster step option, and obviously it's much more easy to trap methane gas in that case, and the aerobic treatment should definitely be looked into and not just passed over, along with the capturing methane. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kate. Lynette Ternosky, followed by Frank Asilio.
Hi, Lynette Tornatsky, Los Osos. I'd just like to thank each and every one of you for spending so much time on this. It really helps the community, me in particular, understand. And I want to thank the county team very much, too. This is our last meeting until next fall. My question was somewhat addressed, which was why wasn't the former project assessed for the carbon footprint? Because I'm really curious about that. I'm just hoping that when that answer does come out with the CEQA process, that it's in some way that we as, you know, lay people will be able to understand what you're telling us about that. And that was my only comment. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Frank Asilio, followed by Chuck Cicina.
Frank Asilio, Los Osos. I have a question. When John brought up the issue about ag exchange and a couple other people made comments about it, I don't understand why the county hasn't done a tech report memorandum on ag exchange, because I'd like to have seen, first of all, the farmers in the area contacted to see if they're willing to do this, because I think it's very important, because we can talk about ag exchange all day long, but are there people out there in the community who we would exchange with, are they willing to do this on a long-term lease? Probably would have to be, what, 20, 30 years? You can answer that question. Also, the number of acres would be needed. What kind of crops would utilize it? If farmers change crops, would that have an effect on the amount of water that they would be taking, needing in that issue? So this is some of the things I'd like to see the county answer. So we quit, you know, either we go with, you know, ag exchange is a very viable thing, or no, it's not, because we don't have enough participants to make it a viable option. We don't have the land for it, or we can't purchase enough property out there in the community. We can't pump the water, or it may take years for us to get the leases necessary to be able to do the exchange, and what lawsuits would be involved. But a tech, cause some of these tech manuals are pretty good, some aren't. And so I would see that as a way for the county, since you guys don't decide that. I hope the county will do that. Important water, I thought, was a big waste of the taxpayers' money who are paying for these tech manuals. I hope the county realizes that we're paying for this, those of us who live in the prohibition zone, and hopefully we get some value out of those that you do produce. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Chuck Cicena, followed by Lindy Owen.
Hello, and yes, thank you for all your hard work, regardless of what you're given to work with. One, sustainability in the future is going to require anaerobic pre-treatment for energy efficiency. I think that's becoming more and more clear, and that's the same thing that a septic tank does. Couple of points that other people have covered, but I think they're worth mentioning again. There are other chemicals besides methanol that can be used to denitrify. Why weren't some of those evaluated? Why just the one with the highest carbon footprint? I think it's clear that ag exchange is a real key toward cutting some of the energy use here, the denitrification, nitrification. The more emphasis we can put into that, I think the better off the energy footprint for this project is going to be. STEP systems can collect methane. You can put biogas collection pipes right in the trench next to your effluent pumping. Cal State Fresno is going to be seeing proposals for that to do the whole campus that way. There's some good things coming out of Fresno. Heck, in India, they use the methane from the septic tanks to cook their dinners, but I guess we're not that advanced. No calculations or data sources are cited anywhere here, and this reminds me of the low-pressure collection system tech memo, which has been revised several times. Why not get all those numbers out there and let people really challenge them? And again, in terms of mitigation, the sequence is avoid, minimize, and then compensate. You can't just go by credits if you've got a better way to eliminate your impacts. Avoid, minimize, then compensate. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Lindy Owen, followed by Richard Marketson.
Good evening, everybody. Lindy Owen. I haven't studied this as well as I wish I could have. One of my questions on methane, because we do know that cattle are one of the largest emitters of methane, and I'm just wondering the amount of methane that we're talking about. I would like to see an analysis just to get perspective of what one cow produces versus what one septic produces. So, again, we can blow things out of the water by talking about methane, but when we've got cows grazing all the hills around here producing large amounts of methane, I'd like to know what the comparison is, because we don't seem to be prepared to take the cows off the land over this problem. I didn't understand Russell's discussion about the STEP BOD versus the septic BOD. He discussed that there was a difference, that the difference that Karen discussed about being concerned, why were there, I believe it was, well, maybe whoever talked about it then. A septic tank produces a certain amount of methane. What's the difference between when it's hooked up to a STEP system? If somebody could clarify that, I don't see that there's any difference at all. You've got a pump that's pushing the water through. So whatever that discussion was, I would like clarification. When you're not using ag exchange off-season, that's when you do the forest growing, and that's where you produce some land. And if we own the land, we have two benefits. One, we're pumping we're in control of the water on that land. It's not a future farmer who's pumping out to give us more saltwater intrusion. We have no control over what is pumped out of these acreages out there. If we own that land, we have one advantage there. Two, the other advantage is that we could grow crops and we could grow forests and we can sell the forests. We've talked about that. Albero's brought the data to you and it should be on file with you. I think that that's, I don't understand the discussion about how there's times of the year that you don't have any place to dispose of land. Broderson, tell me how efficient it is to take water out there, treat it, and then bring it all the way across town, pump it up a hill, endangering an entire part of our community. Explain to me how that's energy efficient and why it's still on the table, or at least why it doesn't have a negative on it. And I didn't hear any discussion about if there were on-site wind and solar collection. The initial cost I'm willing to bear as a payer for this nightmare project that's ahead of us, but if I was paying for solar that wasn't polluting and that could be sold for a profit, I would be solar, or I propose wind. I propose three large wind generators, the slow-moving ones that do not kill birds, and whatever they cost, I think they would be worth the investment. They'll run the entire plant.
Thanks. You very much, Lindy. Richard Margotson, followed by Chris Albee.
Richard Margotson. My comments are dealing with a paragraph on page 7, and the same paragraph is repeated on APP 4. Second paragraph, the last line, the estimate of annual pounds of BOD remaining in the septic tanks is based on the build-out population projected to be 18,428 and a daily flow per capita estimated to be 60 gallons per day with conservation, according to the Flow and Loads Technical Memo, February 2008. You already know, or I've already, I think I've proven that the population, the build-out population is wrong, but the 60 gallons per day, we're almost at that now. The water district, since the technical memo came out, I've been tracking the CSD's water district's production. And for the 10-month period comparison from the fiscal year 06-07 to fiscal year 07-08, for that first 10-month period, 06-07 was 238.4 million gallons. For the same period, 07-08 is 214.6. That's a 10% reduction. Right during the 06-07 fiscal year is when the water rates structure was adjusted and the water rates went up, which, you know, increasing water rates in a tier structure is proven to be the most effective water conservation measure. My point is, we haven't even gotten to the point of a retrofit program for toilets, aerators, shower heads, Bob's recirculating pumps for water heaters. And I did the calculation. We're at just under 62 gallons per capita right now for the CSD's water district. So if this is the basis for these calculations, then I think this technical memo is flawed. My other comment is, and I know nothing about this area, so I'd like some explanation. Could somebody explain the venting of a septic tank, because it's discussed in here? I don't believe all septic tanks in Los Osos are vented now. Is that correct? Right. So that's part of this analysis, and it's not now. Will they have to be under the new project? Will they be vented above ground for all the septic tanks under a new project? That's it. I'd like an answer. Thank you.
Thank you. Richard,
can I ask you a question? I was interested in the reduction. I was interested in the reduction on water. You don't have a per capita number. You just have the gross number.
I do. No, I have a per capita number. Okay. I ran the number through per capita based on the 70-30 that I still have a problem with that also.
Right.
But under all the assumptions in the technical memo for flow and loads, and I came out with just under 62 gallons per capita at this point in the CSD water district.
Well, I was talking about the reduction from the current year. You had a gross number of 10%.
10%.
Do you know, and this is just a question, do you know if any of that is attributable to the waterline improvement program, or is it just through conservation, or is there any way to identify that?
Well, the waterline improvement is only to the from the street to the meter.
Right.
So the conservation takes place from the meter to the house.
So you're talking
because
about
these are consumption numbers.
Right. That's what I was. Yeah, thank
right.
you.
As okay. opposed to production numbers.
All right, thank you. That's
thank
what
you,
I was
Richard.
Trying to get at.
Thank you.
Is that it?
Yeah. Chris Albee, followed by Alan Perlman.
Chris Albee, CEO number 1019. I learned something every one of these meetings. I learned something new. Okay, starting on page 4, could you go over this GWP global warming potential, what exactly that means and who comes up with it? On page 7, we've got, look at that, an odor control scam. Where did he come from? Okay, on page 8, they go into chemical production. I'm really amazed at how many and how much chemicals most of these processes use. The McCarthy Family Farm. I've never heard of them. And it says it's a 130-mile trip. Is that round trip or each way? For sludge disposal, I suppose. On page 9, there's mention under existing system of Santa Maria taking our sludge. I thought that was already pretty much settled. That's not going to happen. And also, under existing system, only a small amount of BOT in the tanks is going to release any odors or gases. Page 12... that's an interesting table there, especially the last column. Total metric tons of emissions per year for these things. And then, we've got PP3. Go with that one. More about chemicals, where they get into the... we've got something called polymer, supplied in 250-gallon totes. We get to use lots of those. On page PP4, we've got 6,800-gallon tanker trucks of sodium hypochlorite. That even sounds dangerous. And then we got methanol being delivered in 45,000-pound tanker trucks. Alum. I thought you only use that when you cut yourself shaving, but we're getting 48,000-pound capacity tanker trucks of that. They don't say exactly how many or how often, but that sounds an awful lot of chemicals.
Thank you very much, Chris.
Oh, is that it?
That's it.
Okay, one final thing. The venting of the septic tanks, I'd like to know more about that, too. Mine's 6 feet down. There's no vent on it.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Our last speaker is Alan Perlman. Is there anyone else who wishes to speak on this subject? Please get your slip in. Alan?
I'm sorry. Okay. Okay. Hi. Alan Perlman, Prohibition Zone. I've been a scientist for a long time, and one thing that happened when I got to Los Osos, as I spoke to people all over, is that there's a lot of scientists in Los Osos. And there's some scientists and people have been involved in knowing about the environment in this table in front of me. And, yeah, I'm going very general. But the bottom line here is this is very new legislation. And I think the TAC has a responsibility and the county staff has a responsibility to and unfortunately, you know, money is involved, but to give this the best look possible, because it could be very easy to just count up how many emissions come out of septic tank multiplied by time. But the principles of having, this is new. The regulatory authorities don't know how to tell you how to encompass a correct capture of carbon credits and carbon effects. And they may have actual legislation in there that is incorrect and will do it incorrectly. So things that have to be used in comparison include, for example, in comparison with the Tri-W situation, what are the carbon costs of hauling septage up to Santa Maria? And while I understand that that's no longer an option, that doesn't mean that those values shouldn't be used, because a new option has not yet been identified. So I think to look at this chapter, truly, it's not something that a lot of people have a lot of experience with. There's a big picture here. You can just count parts of a carbon credit. What really costs things is energy that's used to convert your septage from something that is actually toxic to something that can enter in their environment. Ideally, water is fully separated, et cetera, et cetera. That costs energy. And you really have to assist the county, who are doing a great job, I believe, in as much, but they are in a regulatory environment, and they have to be bold. They have to actually work things upwards. And they have to make this work and count the true costs of all the carbon credits. In our septic tanks right now, what we have are carbons, we have nitrates, and we have water. And those are in there in forms that are toxic. Converting them costs energy, and pumping them and moving them from location to location costs energy. And so any calculation has to capture the entirety. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Alon. And that was our last request to speak on item 2 on our agenda. So with that, we will move on to item 3.
Yes. There's a couple questions that were asked that are pretty simple to answer. Could the people get some answers?
Well,
like the venting, okay? The venting that takes place from your septic tank, the same pipe that brings the liquid in, also can bring the gases out and right out the roof of your house. At the top of your house, you have a vent, and that's where the gases vent. And then as far as Lindy's question asking for, is she still here? Oh, okay. What the difference is between a step tank and a septic tank and the gases. The step tank pumps out some of the BOD, and so that lowers the amount of methane that comes out of the septic tank or out of the step tank. So the step tank ends up a little bit lower as far as the gases that are vented than a septic tank alone would. Yeah, it's all figured in there, but then that same amount ends up being transferred to the treatment plant and gets dealt with there.
Thank you, Rob. I should have asked for responses. Is there any other responses to topics brought up? Maria, did you want to make a comment?
I just had a really silly comment regarding the cows. In New Zealand, and I sent this to Mark, I don't know if you read it, it was kind of a waste of time, but in New Zealand, the methane from cows is their biggest contributor to global warming, so they've actually developed a vaccine to vaccinate the cow and the ruminant they've developed a vaccine for ruminants to decrease their methane production, which they have to do by, was it 2025 or something, so I just found that to be really humorous, so a certain number of cows can have gas and some can't.
Any other? Okay, now I can get back to. That's fine. No, we'll go on with the agenda now. And I'm sorry, I forgot to ask for responses. Our next item then is the technical memorandum regional treatment. And do we have John? Are you going to give us some background?
Yes, John Waddell again. I'll briefly introduce this tech memo. And the topic of regional treatment, similar to imported water or regional water source, also on-site treatment processes, are not exactly community wastewater project options. They're kind of periphery, but they're options for Los Osos that have been identified, you know, in the project development, and there are different options that we know need to be addressed in the environmental impact report, because the environmental impact report, as Mark has said many times, has to consider all alternatives. So essentially, like those other ones, what this is it's a something that would typically be analyzed in an environmental impact report, but we committed early in project development to doing a tech memo on it, and so it's a kind of a preliminary look at analysis that is being done for the EIR. So kind of the options that are explored then for regional treatment, and the idea there is rather than having a treatment plant only for the community of Los Osos, you know, are there potential economies of scale by partnering with other local treatment plants or communities? And so the local treatment plants are Morro Bay and the treatment plant at CMC, the California Men's Colony, which also serves a number of facilities out there. So the tech memo analyzes sending all of the waste from Los Osos to Morro Bay, also analyzes sending it to CMC, and then also the idea of then a truly regional treatment plant that would be kind of centrally located and could treat waste from Los Osos, Morro Bay, and CMC. Just going to the conclusion section, table 2 on page 17, kind of gives a summary of costs, summary of the analysis done in the tech memo, looking at construction costs for constructing a treatment plant. And as it talks about in the tech memo, you know, depending on the level of collaboration with the other agencies, you know, whether you would expand the existing plant or have to kind of build a second plant side by side is kind of a big unknown. There's the pipeline costs for getting the sewage to one of these treatment plant locations. And when it says disposal costs, and especially on where the existing plants are at Morro Bay or CMC, and the assumption of no additional cost, that is for disposal, you know, through the current methods. So for Morro Bay, it would be disposal to the ocean outfall, sending all the treated wastewater out to sea. What's not estimated and so would be different with a treatment plant in Los Osos is, you know, reuse and disposal of the effluent within the community, basically augmenting the water supply within the community, mitigating seawater intrusion. So when you look at the final column there of total costs, the three regional options do not include then a cost of getting that water back to the community of Los Osos and benefiting the water supply. So you'd have to figure in another pipeline and then similar disposal costs that Los Osos would have. So looking at a range of, when you look at those totals, the regional options, if they were going to then send the water back to the community for seawater intrusion mitigation or other benefits to the water supply, you'd have to add, you know, potentially another $20 to $35, $40 million to those options. I get that kind of summarizes in a nutshell these regional options essentially do not really translate to an economy of scale and are kind of significantly are the same or significantly more expensive than the Los Osos option, especially when you consider the water resource impacts.
Thank you very much, John. And I would point everyone out to the appendix, the letters that we received back from Morro Bay and Cayucas. There certainly is a very large lack of interest there. And anyway, I'll open it up first to the engineering group. Do you have any comments or questions?
I believe the report speaks for itself.
Okay. Financial?
Just a couple comments. Generally, it seems like the idea makes sense, but there's always a problem, the most important problem, of getting water back to our own aquifer. And we really think that, while we understand that the economy of scale didn't work out in this situation, we also recognize that there are other things that were issues. For instance, the problem of buying state water. If our aquifer is not protected and in a sustainable way, then we believe that buying state water is really not a responsible way of handling the stewardship of our own aquifer, and it's probably not a good long-term plan, economically even. We also believe that there were risks associated with the estuary, of course, that we all carry near and dear about that, too. One question, which is really not important, perhaps, but even so. Curiosity, if there was an economy of scale to hook up to the Morro Bay Cayucas plant, could the county require that of Morro Bay? I mean, or could either Morro Bay or Cayucas nix the plan and that's that? That's it.
Okay. Anyway, response from...
I'm not sure the answer to that question. I did notice in one of the letters, I think from Cayucas, it says the cost involved in obtaining necessary easements and infrastructure needed to transport waste to Morro Bay. Oh, sorry. That's not the one. Anyway, these letters, one of them speaks to that very issue of if a regional plant were to be forced, and pretty strong language in here that it would be fought heavily. Sorry, I didn't have the exact reference.
Okay, yeah, that's fine. Is there any other comments from anyone on the TAC on this technical memo, Maria?
Well, the only one of the things we looked at was initially is that it doesn't really meet any of our core values, and so there wasn't really a lot of discussion. But then just to be good neighbors, I think the letters speak for themselves.
Right. Okay. Then with that, I'll open this up to comments from the public. Do I have any slips on this item? Oh, God. Thank you. Our first speaker is Don Bearden, followed by Keith Weimer.
Don Bearden, I understand why the county had to analyze this regional treatment system, but as far as I'm concerned, it's dead.
Thank you. Thank you for being brief. Keith Weimer, followed by Rachel. Rosenthal?
I was going to be brief, too, but Don, is taking the cake there. Yes, this TM is a waste of money. I don't want to pay for this one or the imported water or the regional treatment. What was it, the regional solids handling? So let's just deduct that from the bill, okay? And then I agree with you completely, Karen, that we need to be stewards of our own water. We don't want to send it away and just hope that it somehow comes back in rain or something. And we have a $150 million project at least here. And we can actually balance both aquifers and even have some left over for the farmers if we do it correctly. And I will... and shortly present my version of a system or aquifer, and that would balance the basin right there. And that should be done as part of this project because it's also lower the cost of the project. Okay. I'm going to say one more thing that actually is off the subject a bit. I can see Mr. Garvin.
We have public comment. We have public comment at the end.
All I want to do is give you the copy of the 885 draft ordinance that clearly points out that it's not a five-year pumping requirement.
Thank you. Rachel Rosenthal, followed by Frank Osilio.
Rachel Rosenthal, is this general? Wait, this is regional. Okay, sorry. I brought the fine screening because I wanted to. I went last week after I went and watched all the videos of all the tacks because remember how we all said the septic hauling was such a stupid, expensive idea, to be crass, that why would we waste all this money on this? And like this one at a first at Prima, just looking at it in the beginning, it looked like regional sludge was so expensive, so burdensome, so obviously a bad idea. Why did we go through it? So I went back through. And the other matter like that was the state water importing, and then the comparison to the retention of the Tri-W.
Can we keep the remarks to regional treatment?
Site. Well, what my point was is when you go back, Mark Hutchinson made a very eloquent statement about why these four in particular were included in our analysis. And their role is not part of the viable alternative screening, but the mention of these four is always under CEQA and NEPA review. And Mark didn't cite the portions of CEQA and NEPA that he felt compelled him and the county as professionals to include these components. The ironic thing is that all of these four topics actually engendered very interesting project-related discussions and refined some of those matters, the septage issue, the sludge issues, the central location, some aspects of Tri-W, and the value in retaining those all for comparative purposes, for the cost of new water, the cost of foreign water, the cost of energy, which is what I thought the last one brought up, that the team felt that we were missing that beautiful, his statement about the relevance of those, and PAVO, and the importance of regionalism as a funding issue, and that PAVO had to show in that letter to the Board of Supervisors for Prop 50 funding that we had to show that we were being a regional organization and at least trying to be regional when it's cost effective. And those aspects I feel like some of us are missing.
Thank you very much. Frank Osilio, followed by Lindy Owen.
Frank Osilio, Los Osos. Maybe the county can explain sometime to me and to the public, hopefully. You know, you say all alternatives need to be examined in the EIR. And there's some people here that have expertise in that area. I don't have that expertise. I do question, you know, as a person who is also paying for this project, why some of these tech manuals, memos come out. What the benefit is for us. And I'd like to know about how the cost of this tech memo cost. What is it to us? Each one that comes out, is there a separate, a different, I would presume there's different costs because there's a different amount of research need to be done. I hopefully the county would, you know, if I make a request for that information, I can get that information. If later on, hopefully you can answer that. Who's making the decision about this tech, particular tech memo or other tech memos? And who has the ultimate oversight of who's deciding and how the money is being utilized out of the funds that the people of Los Osos in the Prohibition Zone are paying? Who's checking to say, wait a minute, you're going too far, or no, you should go a little farther? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Lindy Owen, followed by Gail McPherson.
Lindy Owen, Los Osos. I agree with the speakers who have discussed how much money was wasted on this part of the study or this memo. And I would venture to guess it was about $40,000 or $50,000. Just to put things in perspective, maybe you could challenge me on that. I always thought regional sounded good, but I don't believe, because the existing treatment and collection is already installed for those people, and it does not address the ideal, which would be the step collection and pond treatment, they would not be compatible, and they have no use together. So I always wondered what the big deal was about that. It's ironic that we talk about we could have been regional with a community like Morro Bay that has raw sewage leaking into their supply, broken pipes galore, and no money to fix it. They're upset about having to spend $20.8 million to upgrade their plant and continue pouring all their water into the ocean and paying to import water. That is not a sustainable system over there, and we can be, but I'm afraid that we're being driven to putting water on Boderson to make somebody happy. Anyway, I also wanted to mention that the men's colony, which would have been the third component to the, besides Morro Bay, to a regional treatment, Corolo designed their plant, and Corolo, and they have constant spills, and Corolo is looking, we have the same people helping us decide, you know, how to build a treatment solution for us. And I think we should take into consideration that they did a terrible job out there, or it's taken them 2 years to, and they're still spilling, and they're still paying fines for that. So I don't know, maybe with their design, that's where we're going to be. So I just believe we have a chance to do something better, and we start out from scratch, and we look at other mistakes, and we don't need to go there. So thanks.
Thank you very much. Gail McPherson, followed by Chris Albee.
Good evening. I just wanted to reiterate from my other earlier comments that my comments go to the technical memos and to you as a body that is a conduit for review of the questions and comments for all the technical memos for alternatives. This regional plan is I think being misunderstood by many and is required in the CEQA process, not necessarily something that we would select. Watershed planning on a regional basis is really a very important and required element today. And funding incentives for regionalization are there. The Water Board has pushed them for a long time. Many communities regionalized, not necessarily in combining their plants, but interconnecting them so there were scalping plants that would recycle water and send solids to a main plant. I would love to off our solids to Morro Bay. I really would, but I don't know that that's practical. The other part is that regionalization is a management system, not necessarily common facilities or intertide facilities. But in a regional concept, there would be a same thing exercise to do and really get your arms around. But in this case, it is simply going through the motions, checking it off the list as an alternative that wouldn't be necessarily possible. The regional energy production, like if you sent solids to one facility, the ability to actually produce energy, putting water in an area where you need it, you start at the end, you look at reclamation, and you put those scalping plants in those areas and in neighborhoods where you can reclaim. And you would revisit STEP in certain neighborhoods and look at reclamation there. It really does have a watershed-wide and regional importance, but I don't believe that this really addresses that. It's simply to check this off the list. But, gosh, it could be a creative exercise, and I think it would be a lot of fun. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And our last speaker is Chris Albee.
Chris Albee, CDO number 1019. Everything we've been talking about tonight and most of these nights seem to have their share of problems. And it's been my observation, anything with a large use of chemicals or any humans or motors involved seem to be doomed to failure. You look at all the failures in the sewage plants and the wastewater disposal around the county here. As far as taking water to Morro Bay or getting processed in Morro Bay, we need every drop of water we can get around here to keep our seawater intrusion from going any further than it has. And I don't see a whole lot of information or effort being put into that. I don't even know what the options are. And it seems like every problem we come up here seems to be solved by our sorry old septic tanks, vented or not. Hey, thank you.
Thank you very much. That was my last request to speak on item number 3. Is there any responses from anyone on the TAC or the project team? A question? Go on.
It's on something else.
Oh. Let's go on.
Okay, sorry. I know this is our last scheduled meeting for the summer, but there we did talk about the fact that there's one technical.
Barrow and Associates further develop a decentralized concept, basically. You know, putting some cost estimates, number of sites, locations of sites, those type of information together, and then we'll be using that to develop a final tech memo. So that information will be released. I think that because Lombardo and Associates are completing their work, I think that could potentially complete that final tech memo by the end of July. That one might go into August. And then, as with all of these technical memos, you know, the purpose is feeding into the environmental impact report process, and then so the environmental team can review these.
Right, but that we just hadn't ever really followed up on it. So that was, thank you for doing that. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Any other general comments from the TAC? Then with that, we'll open it up to a general public comment on items that are under the purveyance of the TAC. Tom Rohr, followed by Keith Weimer.
I'd like to direct your attention to this photograph. Unfortunately, we don't have the projector to see it. What it is, you have it?
We're going to zoom in.
Okay. What it amounts to is it's a site at the Tri-W location. It's showing standing water at that location. What they did was to remove approximately top 10 feet of soil. Therefore, it is not a problem associated with the hydrophobic nature of the soil conditions due to the waxy plant materials. But what's actually happening as a consequence is that this water is standing here 5 days after the rain stopped. The last week had 0.4 inches of rain on this site. The photograph then is representing the 0.4 inch of rain collected in that hole after 5 days of no rain. And you ask why, and I'm going to tell you why. A 6 to 10 inch thick layer of clay exists 10 to 20 feet below the surface at that site. This clay layer prevents effective downward movement of water in Los Osos. Make this very serious, gross engineering mistake. Is it because they do not take courses in basic principles of soil science and water movement? I will hand out my comments, and I hope to share this picture. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Keith Weimer, followed by Don Bearden.
I just have a couple questions of the county, actually. I didn't understand whether the decentralized would actually be reviewed by the TAC on its second life when PO's done with adding some of the details. Also, I was interested in some of the comments that you made when I gave input on the combined system. And the comments were that the water board, you didn't think they would approve it, so you didn't think it was a good thing to look at. But I wonder, is it going to be reviewed in the EIR? Because I understood that all viable options were supposed to be reviewed, and that technically is viable. And I don't think we should judge what the options are based on what may or may not be approved, because obviously the water board or whatever agency you were referring to wasn't specific about either approving or not approving. So I'd like to know whether the cluster step stage system will be reviewed in the EIR, whether the combined low pressure system will be reviewed with all of the potential placement of the grinder pumps. And I know one estimate was 200, but it could go as high as 600 grinder pumps once we put those in low, high groundwater areas. 600 grinder pumps is as much as 30 square blocks of grinder pumps. So obviously somebody asked what happened to the review of low-pressure combined system, and I'm wondering the same thing, because obviously it should have been looked at for the AB 32 issue as well. I'm wondering, what about the 25% conservation proposal that was made by the sustainability groups? That is a very achievable amount, and it would cut the cost of the system, and it would also curb seawater intrusion. So that's a very viable option. Now, is that going through the EIR? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Ask the county respond to that.
I probably can respond to that one. This is not the community survey that we have been talking about earlier in the year. That is another document that will be coming out later, which goes to everyone. It's much broader than just where you want a septic tank on your property. Rachel Rosenthal, followed by Gail McPherson.
I want to thank you all. I get very cynical by this point. And I really did go back and watch all those DVDs. I know it's hard to believe. But I gained a little bit of hope back. I don't know whether it was Michelle Obama's speech or what, but she said, don't be cynical, because you never know when you're being, like, just not getting up off your rear to do something as opposed to being burned out and for reasons or whatever. But thank you very much. And I found like we've been through this. Bob, you've been doing this for, when you said about you did your thesis on this, you've been doing this for 35 years probably, and it's really hard to think that there's anything else to learn about septics or the groundwater. But it's amazing. It's just with a new mix or something, or a way of looking at it, or you getting older and wiser and having more experience, there's more to bring. And you, this mix gave a lot to each other with John and the other John and Russ, all the new, and Rob. It's changing and getting more and more professional with each decade, and we get to watch it. But I have the corrections on the citation to the AB 885, and that septic tanking pumping will not be required. And here it is with the proper legal citation to the code, and I have that for the county. But I wanted to ask to keep this last memo about greenhouse gas open for us and not to declare it final. I've been working in this field, and the final protocols for California just came out in April, and I believe there were very serious errors in terms of process, methodology, and what is required under the California program. And also, I believe, because it is not required yet and the final rulemaking is not over, I think we, and you guys too, and to be able to put a point-by-point critique with reference to the documents for California and the UN panel.
Thank you very much. Gail McPherson, followed by Alan Perelman.
I would definitely agree with Rachel on the need to keep this open and watch how things evolve. I agree that just in April that the information is still pretty fresh and needs to be reviewed. I also ask that that there be a tech memo prepared on gravity systems. I have prepared a letter and sent it out today because it looks like that's a big a big hole in this whole process is that gravity has never been brought up to date with the regulatory issues and compared properly against STEP. It's only been the STEP system and then status quo on the other end, giving it a free pass. I also believe that the energy analysis that Rachel was talking about and the call by many members here and proponents of the Midtown project should be a baseline in every one of the tech memos, in every process, and take a good look. I don't think you want to know on the greenhouse gas emissions and the energy analysis, but I think we have to. We have to look at it and say, okay, it's really dead. But the decentralized memo, I had a question about whether it's being revised again and what happened with Mike Saunders' letter, which I reviewed, and I thought, hey, he made some very good points. I did go and visit, I do field trips when I go on vacation, and I did get to Oregon Gardens and the Silverton Treatment Plant, and I suggest anybody who knows anything about it, Google it and check it out. It's really wonderful. Besides that, STEP systems in Lacey, Olympia, and Camas. So I think that there's some really good new information out there and that you should take the time to really get going on that, and I hope the public does participate in the field trips. And we need to look very seriously at AB 885 and how not to trigger that. And disposal at Broderson does trigger AB 885, and AB 885 was not in the tech memo. It was not referenced. It was referenced 14 or 16 times in the other ones, but never in that one. And it's really critical that that be part of that process. Avoid, reduce, mitigate is kind of the thing with greenhouse gases, but it goes for everything. If you can avoid in the first place the problems, and then if you have, cannot wait, cannot have a delay, and I understand that's been delayed.
Thank you very much, Kat. Alan Perlman, followed by Lindy Owen.
I'd like to cover as many topics as possible. So far, you've received a lot of very good public comment, and some of it does say that your own process is good. I hope you really do feel privileged to be hearing this good quality of public comment and being involved in this process. I'd like to thank Maria Kelly for actually bringing up the missing report. I hope a procedure can be adopted to sort of conduct, if the meeting cannot actually take place, that some kind of semi-formal, within your purview, virtual meeting in terms of collecting possibly comments from members and possibly giving a larger a written synopsis of the report that's attuned to public. In other words, not everybody in Los Osos will be able to be involved, but those that do operate through computers will at least be able to have a virtual meeting in some form. So thanks for mentioning that. It was a great commentary by so many people, and a lot of it was, Mr. Rohr mentioned the nature of the soil. If the area under Broderson was all that porous and good to recharge the aquifer, how come there is 8,000-year-old water still beneath us? I mean, if it's that porous, you would not maintain that identity. You'd have the water from 50 years ago pushing all the way through. So we exist on a bunch of bumpy clay laminates. The dunes shift. Clay gets deposited. This is a very unique situation, and again, I think that has to be conveyed within those reports that this, if you can't have a CEQA process without really understanding the nature of this exact area. The regionality issue, I think it's true what Mrs. McPherson said. It's a normalization of the regulatory environment, the ability for the regulatory agencies to not use enforcement, selective enforcement, rather to even the fastest way between two points. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Lindy Owen, followed by Joe Sparks.
Lindy Owen again. I really do want to thank the entire committee for all the time they've put in. I know it's been a lot of technical depth to go to, and I wish that you had better material to work with. Unfortunately, I'm not very happy with the way the process was. I do believe that it's become chaotic because it's been broken into three different systems, the collection, the treatment, and disposal. And I don't think that you can, that's just not the way you design a project and see what the aspects and pros and cons are. But I kind of wanted to talk about energy design right now is our opportunity. Los Osos is, we are the green project that could be. And so looking at this old technology and trying to help whoever has contract deals set up, as far as I can tell, because I have tried to figure out why this is not going green, and it has to do with politics, and it has to do with other preconceived plans, and I wish they would go away, and we'd sit down at a table that's designing for our grandchildren and our children, because that's what this is about. This is not, I could care less about those contracts. They can all be rearranged, and people could have jobs doing the work that would be better work. My ideal solution was Ripley Phase 1. That was to take all the low-lying areas that are currently sitting in high groundwater and take that out and put a great ponding system outside of town, create a wetlands, buy land to do ag exchange, to grow forests on, to put the three windmills on. That takes, then we sell that energy to the grid and we get enough to actually power our entire town. That's the kind of progressive forward thinking that we should be doing. Everybody else remains on septic management. The regional board has never proven where the nitrates are coming from. And I'll tell you what, they'll never prove that they're coming from septic tanks because they aren't. The tests show that they aren't. And you know, that again, the political nature of why we're building a plant and what we, you know, why we're trying to get our water cycle put together and do this so that we actually have enough water for the build out. I'm not trying to say no to future development, but I am saying no to stupidity, greed, and waste. And that's what I see in our way, and I wish we could get over that. So I encourage the next process to.
And as you go forward and you hear some comments, and I heard some from Dr. Rohr tonight about infiltration, and you need to listen very carefully to some of these comments given to you. Whether or not you use Brodersen is going to depend on a lot of factors, but you shouldn't buy into some of these misconceptions that, unfortunately, he's created. In the attachment on June 9th, he said, the proposed infiltration rate at Brodersen is 5.5 times the total rain for 1 month being applied every single day. And that's just totally bad information from him. What is being proposed by the county is 3.5 gallons per day per square foot. And that's with 100% redundancy in the leach fields. It's, and the average is going to be about 1.75 gallons per day per square foot. That's less than 100 times based on the infiltration tests that were run. So my question would go to Rob Miller. How much do we have to endure with this misconception from people that aren't engineering geologists, which he is not? And would you recommend additional PERC tests at the Brodersen site? Because this sort of information being presented by him is really misleading. He used this 30 gallons of wastewater to be applied per square foot per day, and that's a peak less than six times the infiltration tests. But what the county is proposing on an average basis is less than 100 times where the mounting would even begin. So it's extremely conservative. And I hate to see that these misconceptions are being created. And again, Rob, if you're a professional engineer, the engineering geologists that have studied this know what they're doing. And so if you think there's additional percolation tests that would need to be justified by the county, then I think it's up to you to provide that information back to the community. But certainly this kind of scare information doesn't suit the community well in making a decision.
Thank you very much. And our last speaker is Frank Osilio. Give me a separate slip for this, please. Go.
Okay. Yeah. I'd like to thank the TAC members who have asked some very good questions. I'd like to also, you know, Rob Miller, too, for some of his comments and questions. But I'd like, you know, some questions that you guys asked were really pertinent and helped provide education for me.
I'm glad to hear that the Los Osos people are skeptical. It's always nice. I enjoy people who question systems, don't go along with systems, because that's how change comes about. So that's where I get a little confused. To supplement the pictures that I presented last time, there's no projector, so I'll show them. Hopefully you can catch it. This is the house on Highland and Bayview Heights. For those people who are familiar with the area, it's five houses up from the fire station. As you can see, the car, I'm going to submit this document to the county. You can see the car is buried in mud and sand that came down off that hillside. There was a ditch there that when we had that heavy rain. You can see in the front side, you know, and this is my concern. I sure don't want people, if a lot of water is pumped up there, as well as the natural forces of nature come about, to have to endure this kind of thing. This is the article. You know, and this one, it shows, you know, a tragic thing is that the person's digging out under the bed, the mud, and that's the mud in the backyard, too. So all this will be, this happened in December 25th, what a Christmas present, 1979. So I'll submit that information, and as I do further research and find more information, I will present it to the county and to this committee on those issues of flooding up in that area. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And now our last speaker is Chuck Cicena.
I'm Chuck Cicena, resident of Los Osos. I apologize. I didn't realize you wanted a separate slip for each item. I would reiterate that Dr. Ruhr is a soil scientist. Mr. Sparks is not. And certainly answers to Broderson, definitive answers are what we've always wanted. And you can't tell me that the definitive answers came from an engineering firm who wouldn't stamp the project report that called for putting so much water at Broderson. I have no confidence in that at all. I think those answers do need to come. But the real questions I wanted were three, and I'll be brief so that maybe you can answer them during the rest of my 3 minutes. Does Pio Lombardo's involvement with a technical memo disqualify him for submitting an RFQ or answering the call when RFQs come out? And what did happen to the schedule for the RFQs? I thought it was going to be May, and we'd like to keep this process moving, so why has it been delayed? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Does anyone wish to make responses to any of the comments? Rob?
Yeah, do I dare respond? I think on the Broderson issue, you know, we probably need more time to really vet that out. We did talk about it a few meetings ago. I think one thing we have going in our favor is the ability and not just have to put everything on paper up front, but have real data over time. Try to keep that short.
Thank you. John?
I would ask when we do that to do some kind of a cost per gallon benefit for that disposal. What is it going to cost to put a gallon of water at Broderson versus what it's going to cost to put a gallon of water on an ag field somewhere?
That's a good idea.
And if the use is only minimal, why bother? But the other questions are the ones I really wanted answers for tonight, the RFQ, and PO's involvement and why the delay.
John, do you think you can answer those?
Yes. Actually, I think I had a discussion with Pio Lombardo on that issue, and the guidelines for design-build contracting kind of specifically state that the owner's consultants who help develop the RFQ, RFP cannot propose. I don't think that Pio Lombardo's involvement in proposing a decentralized concept as part of the technical memo is any way related to developing an RFQ, RFP contract document. So, of course, it's kind of up to, the final word would be from legal counsel, but I don't see a conflict there, and I think Pio Lombardo is comfortable with that also. On the design-build process, no, we did not scheduled to have a RFQ released in May. We had been planning and looking at releasing one prior to the draft EIR, but after looking at it further, we think it's prudent to wait until after the draft EIR is released to do the design-build process. So that way, you know, proposers and then also the county in reviewing even the statements of qualifications will have the benefit of the EIR and projects that are, you know, where they are, where they end up ranking on the environmental analysis will have the benefit of having that in front of us when both when teams put in their statements of qualifications and when we review them.
Thank you very much. And then with that, I'd like to, yes, Kate, quick. They've been in the meeting. We appreciate your time and to the TAC. You've got some time off, although we'll still probably be getting information from the county as they develop develop things. But I hope everyone has a good vacation. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Real quick question. Back at the very beginning, John, the question dawned me that even though we're on sort of a recess, there's still stuff going on. Will we have the opportunity to continue to submit questions and comments? Or actually, Mark, this is probably for your, you can answer this better. What's a deadline for getting any other questions and comments for the EIR?
Actually, the question and comment period on the EIR extends after the draft is out, so, you know, it's fair game.
Thank you. Okay, everyone, have a good vacation, and we'll let you know well in advance when we need to get put together again. Thank you very much.